Hello, and welcome to the Architectette podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Brady. Architectette is a podcast that illuminates the lesser heard stories of women plus in architecture and related fields. On today's bonus episode of Architectette, we welcome Claire Kern. Claire is a landscape architect and founder of Pass the LARE. We chat about her work experience in landscape architecture, the process and challenges of obtaining a license, parallels to architecture and the AREs, which is actually very timely because we just had an episode with Patricia Romalo of NCARB. Then we had an episode with Julianne Peters, who talked a lot about the licensing exams for interior designers. So we thought we would follow it up with a third episode with a landscape architect. If you're interested to learn more about Claire and landscape architecture, check out our show notes. Enjoy the episode. Claire, I'm very excited to welcome you to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Caitlin. I'm excited to be here.
So Claire, you're a landscape architect. How did you decide to pursue your path?
So I've been a licensed landscape architect since 2018, and I have wanted to be a landscape architect for a while though. So, I mean, I grew up in a very rural environment. So rural Alabama, middle of nowhere, surrounded by nature, surrounded by the forest and, you know, all of these systems that I got to witness every single day, all these natural ecological systems. I didn't like growing up that way. I wanted to move to the city and be a part of the hustle and bustle and all the culture and the arts and the sports and everything that a city has to offer. But I think that, you know, in hindsight, looking back, that gave me such a profound love for nature growing up in such a rural environment. You know, I mean, I would sit out in the evenings and watch the sunset every night, you know, over the fields and hear the thunderstorms coming in and know what birds are migrating through. And, you know, just like I said, just being a part of all of those ecological systems really formed who I was and formed what career path I wanted to pursue. And so that ultimately became landscape architecture. In high school is when I realized that I wanted to pursue a path in landscape architecture. My aunt was a landscape architect, so I thought, okay, you know, I've seen someone do it. I know what it is. It's more tangible that way. This seems like this is something that can combine my love of nature with my love of design. And so that's what I did. I went to Auburn University and pursued an undergraduate and then followed up with a master's degree in landscape architecture.
Mm-hmm. And to become a landscape architect, is it required that you have that both bachelor and master's degrees? Or what is that path towards becoming, you know, if you wanted to get your license, what requirements are there?
Yeah, so you can do either or you can do both. So you can get a bachelor's degree in landscape architecture. I think there's like 70 universities across the United States that offer a bachelor program. So it's pretty widely offered. It can be a bachelor of science in landscape architecture or just bachelor of landscape architecture. And that's usually a 4 or 5 year program. You can also get your master's, which can be an additional, you know, add on of a year, 2 years, 3 years. Every program varies with that. Or you can actually just do a standalone master. Like if you have an undergraduate degree in something totally different, but then you realize that this is the career path you want to pursue, then you can actually go in and get a master's that might be more of a 4 to 5 year program as a standalone, and that counts. And then there's also other requirements such as, you know, a certain number of hours and years that you have to work underneath another registered landscape architect. So it's sort of like an apprenticeship program that's also required for licensure. So it's, you have the degree requirement, the apprenticeship requirement, and then also passing the exams.
Mm-hmm. And are most people in the profession licensed, or is it kind of, you can practice without that license and it's really just a select few that go that extra level?
Well, so it's similar to architecture in that you can't, in the United States, it's regulated, United States, Canada, and Mexico, so all of North America, it's regulated that you cannot call yourself a landscape architect unless you are registered. Now, that's not the case all over the world. Europe has a similar type restriction. South America, it really varies per country. And then same for Asia, it kind of varies, you know, varies per country and everything. But you have to pass the exams in order to call yourself a landscape architect. And I would say it's hard to really judge the percentage of landscape architects that are registered because, again, you can't call yourself a landscape architect without being registered, you know, so like that survey metric is really hard to gauge. So they say around 75% are registered. I feel like that doesn't accurately represent the entire profession, though, because there are so many landscape designers. You know, like you can do residential and you don't have to get registered. You know, like you absolutely don't need that. But in order to do public spaces, you really do You know, and so that's where there's sort of like a differential between landscape architects and landscape designers, where rubber really hits the road and you need to kind of decide if you should get licensed or not. So it's hard to kind of give that statistic and it be accurate just based off the nature of the profession and the different realms that it touches.
Okay. So if you were working on just single family, you could be a landscape designer. So you wouldn't have to get, you could have a whole practice and profession, a whole career, wouldn't need to get that license per, you know, per the state or the federal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's not to say that you wouldn't want to, and it wouldn't benefit your career to get licensed. You know, I mean, absolutely having those credentials and learning, you know, having all of that knowledge that you gain from the licensure process would definitely help your profession. But is it really required to succeed? Not, you know, I don't think so. I think you can still be successful in a residential setting and not be licensed. Where, like I said, where it really comes into play is in public spaces. So you're doing streetscapes and parks and things where the public interacts. And that is where health, safety, and welfare is of utmost importance. And, you know, you really do need to pursue your licensure in order to give your career that advantage.
Okay. And so that would like multifamily housing also fall under that? You would need a license then to practice within that realm. It's really just single family residential and then all other things that are affecting the public on a greater scale, you would need that license.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, I mean, this is just sort of my subjective view on this. There's no hard and fast rule, but just from what I've seen in my career, my colleagues watching their success, that's just sort of, you know, what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. And so from your perspective of what you've seen too, what are the typical demographic breakdowns of people who are landscape architects versus people who might be landscape designers? Is there trends that you've noticed in terms of male versus female? I know architecture has historically leaned very male, very white. Are you seeing the same trends in landscape architecture?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're right on par as far as that goes. We're fighting a similar fight there. So yeah, landscape architects are very, it's about 65% male and it's like 90% white. So not that many minorities represented in the field of landscape architecture, for sure. It's definitely something that, you know, we need to focus on, and there needs to be more advocacy and awareness to try to get more minorities to know what the profession is and to be interested in the profession. Because again, when we're talking about designing for the public, we need to represent those, we need to represent the public, you know, and it's easy to think, okay, well, this is what I would want in this park, you know, but what about the other 90% of people that are going to be using that park? You know, what do they want to see in that public space? And so it's important to have many different viewpoints represented in the profession and many different backgrounds and racially, economically, as well as, you know, from other countries too.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if there are any outreach programs that are trying to target, to recruit more people of diverse backgrounds to be in landscape architecture?
There are. Yeah. And I've seen that happen in the last 5 years. I don't think there really wasn't enough outreach. But in the last 5 years, I've seen multiple organizations bloom and really try to push that. So that's been, I think it's going to be really helpful for our profession.
And so once you're in the profession, what does like a typical work week look like in terms of your responsibilities and your tasks, things you're working on? And then what is that work-life balance?
It's really easy to get burnout. So that's something that, you know, I preach over and over to anybody that comes to me and wants to talk about, should I become a landscape architect? You know, like, what does it look like? That's number one reason why people leave the field, probably similar, you know, to architecture. So I recently saw a meme. It's funny. It had an architect and a client, and you might've seen the same one. It was like all over social media, but it had an architect and a client over the ground. And then underneath the ground, underneath that ground plane, it had like 50 workers and they're all like holding up the ground. And that was labeled unpaid overtime, you know? And then above it was architecture profession. And I was like, oh, it's funny, but it's not funny, you know? And so I think burnout is something that is definitely real and definitely affects our profession, because we, as designers, we love to design and design is never finished. You know, I mean, you can reiterate something over and over and over again, and you can tweak it and you can change it. You can start all over. You can do it forever, you know, but at some point you have to put your pencil down and say, okay, I'm going home to my family. And I need to, you know, maintain this work-life balance and draw this line in the sand and stand your ground there. So,
And so when you are working through the design process, what are the different things that you're thinking about in terms of, like, for land, you know, architecture, we cite the building and we look at the elements. Does it start like that too for landscape architecture? And what are the different constraints that you're considering as you flesh out that design?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it definitely depends on, you know, the project scope, right? Because there are so many different types of things, similar to like if you were designing a museum versus, you know, someone's house, right? Like you would have a similar process, but yet also different, you know, like there would. And so it's similar for landscape architecture. But I think you start, you know, with your inventory, you gather as much information as possible. And that's through interviews and site visits and research and flood mapping and all of the things, you know, you really gather that inventory and then you analyze what that means. You know, okay, what are the constraints that this information that I'm taking in, how does it dictate what my design can and can't do, you know, and how should I build upon that for good or for bad? You know, like, should I improve upon this or, you know, and work with it? Or is that something that we really need to minimize? But, you know, you analyze all that information and then you come up with concepts. You know, that's when you roll out the trash paper and, you know, you're putting your circles and your lines and, you know, you're just kind of like getting your thoughts out on paper. And then it progresses, you know, from there, just like it does in architecture. You know, you put it in either a computer program, or not many people do hand designs anymore just because, you know, it's so time consuming. But so most people use computer designs like CAD, you know, and then that kind of kickstarts the whole process. And it's similar to architecture as far as, you know, you have your 30% milestones, your 60% milestones, you know, your 90%, you know, we're working alongside the architects, the civil engineers, the structural engineers, ecological engineers. I mean, I was just on a call right before this where we're talking about daylighting a stream channel, you know, and so it was a stream that had been covered in concrete and, you know, in a concrete culvert since the 1970s, you know, so 50 years now. And we're talking about, okay, how do we daylight this and bring it back to a healthy natural system where the groundwater can recharge and wildlife, there's wildlife habitat and there's, you know, a lot of ecological benefits here, as well as water quality management. And so we're working with the city on that because it's very polluted right now. And by restoring it to a natural system, we'll actually make it cleaner. You know, so like I said, there's so many different things and it really just depends on what type of project it is. But I think overall, it kind of follows that general design process, similar to how an architect would probably start their design and follow through.
And for a lot of these projects, is your team as the landscape architect, are you contacted directly by the client or are you often contracted to a different entity that is, you're a sub-consultant to someone else?
You know, it varies. It depends again on the type of project. I've worked in many different realms and usually for public spaces, I find that the landscape architect is usually prime because it's, and for the public spaces that are hiring landscape architects, I should say, right? You know, so again, not like a museum, but like a park, you know, stormwater management park or something. And then, okay, yes, there needs to be a welcome center or a restroom facility or whatever. And then we would bring in our architects to collaborate on that. And then, of course, there needs to be a civil engineer, like I said, that's doing all the stormwater design and things like that. So it kind of just depends. But I've also worked in multifamily where we would be the sub-consultant. You know, we would be under the architects because that's sort of the basis of that project is mainly architecture. And then the landscape, you know, kind of supports that as far as amenity spaces go and the site design and things like that. So it can be either. It's really just based off the nature of the project. I see it multiple ways where the landscape architect's either working for a city, they're working for a developer, they're working for an architect, sometimes a civil, you know, sometimes the landscape architect goes under the civil, depending, you know, if it's a big infrastructure type project. You know, so it just depends on the type of project. There's multiple different dynamics, you know, depending.
Do you have any one project that you look to as your favorite project?
Oh, gosh. I love them all. One that doesn't have budget cuts. Does that exist? Okay. That would be my ideal project.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause is there something that you always try to propose that always gets VE'd out? Like, I don't know, a specific type of tree or planter or some type of fixture that you're like, oh, my gosh, it would be my dream if it didn't get VE. Right.
So I'm a plant person. I love plants. That was like one of the reasons that got me into this profession. So I have to like rein it back. I'm always like, okay, this is my ideal, but okay, now let's be realistic. And this is what we're going to end up with, you know? So I'm always trying to push the boundaries with plants, and I'm always trying to do more native plants, more, you know, drought tolerant plants, more water wise plants, plants that provide habitat for birds and wildlife, you know, and even like phytoremediation. You know, I've done that in projects as well, where we have lead or other, you know, heavy metals in the soil that plants can actually soak up those and clean those. But I do love it when I can get, I can really, really make it shine through some specialty plants. And like I said, especially like natives and plants that provide a lot of value ecologically.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. And so another thing of, can you name your favorite? Is there one piece of advice or a lesson that you learned either through like a mistake that you made or a mentor that dropped some type of piece of advice that like really sticks with you as you progress in your career?
That's interesting. You know, I mean, I did mention burnout earlier, and I think that mm-hmm. holds true across all designs, whether it's architecture, landscape architecture, interior design, you know, whatever, graphic design, you know, any sort of design. I think that's something that as designers, we need to be cognizant of, and it's real, and we need to recognize it. And we don't need to push ourselves too far, because it doesn't do us any service, and it doesn't do our profession any service either. So that would honestly be my biggest advice.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Avoid the burnout, do your best, great work, but also make sure to keep that balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're all people at the end of the day. We all have a family, and you know, you have to maintain that balance. So it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's nothing to be scared of. Your career's still going to be fine, you know. So it's better, I think, for everybody's well-being if we all kind of recognize that.
Exactly. And well, on that same line as burnout is the process of getting your license. It involves probably a ton of, you know, you're working full time. You have to fulfill these kind of like apprenticeship hours underneath a licensed landscape architect. And then after work, while you're trying to balance your personal life, you know, activities, family, obligations, you have to study for a series of exams to get that license. Can you talk about what is the process of studying? And it's called the LARE, which is easy. It'll be easy for us architects to remember. What is that process, and what does that test or tests include?
Yeah, so it's actually pretty similar to the AREs for architects. So it is a series of four exams. The first, they're all kind of focused on different things, and it goes from that inventory and analysis phase all the way through to construction phase. And it just sort of, you know, kind of breaks it out like that. It's a very difficult exam, just like the AREs are. I mean, it has about on average, like I think 50 to 65% pass rate. It's pretty difficult. I mean, a lot of people do not pass it on their first round for sure. People usually take only, and again, similar to the AREs, people usually only take one section at a time, just because it does consume every single spare moment of your life. You know, you're pouring through books, you're taking practice exams, you know, you're doing flashcards, you're doing all the things to try to study for this exam, and it takes up a lot of time. Is it worth it? Absolutely. Do you learn a lot in the process? Absolutely. I mean, do you come out the other side as a better landscape architect? Yes. You know, so it's definitely something that I think has been good for our profession. And landscape architecture is a relatively new profession compared to architecture. Frederick Law Olmsted, you know, is our founder, really. So he's the father of landscape architecture. And so it's been around almost about 100 years now. But again, in the span of things, architecture has been around for a lot longer than that. So as a profession, we're still evolving. We're still figuring out what works. You know, what exactly do these tests need to focus on? And our profession changes over time, especially with climate change and the way our world is going, that we have to respond to that. And our profession has to respond to that. And so the exam is updated every 5 years to reflect, you know, what those new issues are. And that's based off feedback that members provide, you know, so working professional landscape architects, you know, they fill out the survey, probably similar to what you guys do as architects. And that informs the next rendition of the exam. But it's a difficult exam. Like I said, four of them are offered. It's offered 3 to 4 times a year. And each exam takes about 3 hours just for one section. And you have to pass all four of them before you can be a registered landscape architect. And there is a set amount of time that you have to complete all four sections. You can't just spend 10 years, you know, doing it. And you really want to do it within one window, and they update it about every 5 years. So you really want to do it within that, because then the test changes, you know, and not everything transfers over and they reorganize sections and things like that. So you're kind of on a clock once you start. But really it's one of those things where you just want to go heads down and knock it out. Probably similar to what architects do with the AREs as well.
And could you take all of them in like 1 week, or there are specific times throughout the year that the tests are offered? So if you miss that, then you have to wait for the next window.
So that is something that I think does differ from the AREs, because the LAREs are only offered certain times a year. So that's what I was saying, like only 3 to 4 times a year is it offered, and it's about a 3 week period. So there's one in the spring, one in the summer, and then one kind of fall and winter. And then depending on, sometimes they throw in a bonus one. If they're like, if they're changing, if it happens to be one of those years where they're changing the exam and things are going to get a little shuffled, then they'll change and they'll add an extra exam period in there. But yeah, it's only offered during those specific times of the year, which can also be difficult because, you know, you might have a big deadline and you're at 90% right there at the end of the exam period and you're trying to balance life and work and everything, you know. So sometimes people wait and they say, okay, I'll catch it on the next one. You know, I'll do the summer one, not the spring one.
Wow. So that can really adds a lot of time. If you fail, or if you have a schedule conflict, next thing you know, you're bumped months and then you're bumped again.
Absolutely. And they do that, I think, because each one of these exams, while it is a computerized standard test, it is still reviewed by hand. So the CLARB, the Council for Landscape Architecture Registration Board, still reviews every single test by hand. And they do that because we have the opportunity to provide feedback for every single question. Now, whether they take into account that feedback or not, you know, who knows, but they still want to review every single one, and they want to do that prior to the next exam period. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. Like if you miss it, you can't just turn around the next week and say, oh, okay, I'm going to register again and I'm going to pass it, you know, in a week from now. Nope. You got to wait a couple more months, and try it at that point. So it does take a while, and it is like I said, a pretty big, process. So you got to have some ambition to get through it, but it is worth it. And I personally learned a lot when I was going through the licensure process. And I think everybody typically does. So I think it is something that you really do gain a lot of knowledge from.
Wow. And it's high stakes because you want to get this professional advancement, but then you're studying, and it's crazy that the pass rates are so low. And then, it must add so much time onto people's licensure process, because if the tests are that challenging, and we'll touch too, I'm sure that the study material isn't really out there to adequately prepare people. And then they only have these windows. It's like you goof, and it's like you're adding months, years maybe onto that process. So you have tried to tackle this issue. Can you talk about what led you to establish Pass the LARE?
Yeah. So I, after I went through the licensure process, I'm a fixer by nature. If I see a problem, I want to fix it. You know, it's just how I operate. I'm always looking to improve things. I love like self-improvement books. Like I feed on it. You know, I love it. And I think as women, we naturally do. Like we like to tend, we like to groom. We're always trying to fix our husband, fix our kids, you know? so I wanted to fix the LARE. You know, I went in and I did, and I heard from so many of my colleagues that had the same exact struggle I did. Everybody was in the same boat. There just was not enough resources out there. This is a very difficult exam, and for good reason. Like I said, I mean, you know, not at all bashing the exam. The exam is what it is, and it needs to be that way. But there wasn't resources out there. There wasn't enough resources. And so I created Pass the LARE, which is a series of practice tests. And we have two for each exam. And basically what it does, there is no McGraw-Hill or Corson or, you know, any of those like GMAT or GRE, those big SAT books, you know, that we all kind of poured through for those standardized tests. There is not one of those for the LARE. And so you're really left with kind of hodgepodging stuff together. And the Council of Landscape Architects Registration Board does do a good job of giving you a series of books. They give you about 10 to 15 books, and they break it out and they say, okay, on exam one, you need to read these five. Exam two, you need to read these three. Exam, you know, whatever. But that's a lot. I mean, these are textbooks that we're talking about. These are not little manuals, you know? And then what do you need to know from that textbook? I mean, you know, we're not computers here. So, mm-hmm. so it's a big, you know, studying for this exam is a big undertaking. And, so that's what I tried to solve, was to create a better resource for people to, because I did read all those books. I'm crazy. And so I did filter through and figure out, okay, what is the most important information that we need to know from this? And I created a series of practice tests, and each one of those questions references back to the source material, where you can say, okay, this is on page 247 in this book, sixth edition. I can go and read those five pages about this subject, you know, but that saves so much time. I mean, just having that information at your fingertips, I wish I would have had that. And I wish so many of my friends and colleagues would have had that when we were going through the licensure process, because it's just extremely helpful. I mean, I've gotten so many emails from people that have just said, like, thank you for doing what you do. This is amazing. You know, I passed my exams, wouldn't have been able to do it without this resource. So it's been really rewarding and fulfilling in that way, that I get to help others. And it's been fun. It keeps me on top of my game, right? I mean, I'm always having to like update things. Like I mentioned, they update it every 5 years. So we just went through a huge update process, at the end of 2023 to reflect the new exam. So it's been challenging personally and professionally, and yet also, like I said, super rewarding to help the profession grow. And even on a personal level, making those connections with people and hearing their stories, has been great.
And then also too, as you were talking about kind of the licensure process, I know you mentioned that you have your mother. How have you seen any trends? And I forgot to ask this earlier when we were talking about demographics, of oftentimes people are taking these tests at like a mid-career or early mid-career point, which is also the time that a lot of people become mothers or parents. What have you seen any trends of people falling out of the profession at that mid-career? What are the challenges of pursuing the dream to become a licensed landscape architect if you are also taking on caregiving responsibilities?
Yeah, no, I am so happy I did it prior to having children because it does take so much time. But that's not to say that you can't do it. There have been so many people that I know that have gotten licensed, after, you know, post having children, and they have a full family and they're still able to do it. So it's all about time management, you know, and that's what I was kind of touching on earlier, where it's like, you got to draw that line in the sand and you have to respect your, you know, those boundaries. And so it's all about managing that time. I think you can do anything you set your mind to. You just have to you got to allocate your time efficiently. So whatever method works for you, whether it's calendar appointments where it's like, okay, these 2 hours, this is when I'm studying. You know, I used to study on my lunch break. I mean, that's how I did it. Was, yes, I studied after work, but I would block it off, and, you know, I'm not available from 12 to 1. That is when I'm studying, you know, and I eat my lunch at my desk and I use that hour, and that helps a lot, you know. So whatever method works for you, but just being organized and time management, I think, is the biggest thing in order to balance parenthood and career, you know.
Mm-hmm. So we'll do some quick advice. Do you have any quick advice for people that are starting out their landscape architecture career?
Yeah, I mean, I personally think it's a great profession. You know, obviously I'm biased, but I think it's a profession where you can really have an impact, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And if you think, you know, if you want to see a change that that can be implemented through landscape architecture, go for it, because it is a profession that is made up of a lot of passionate people, a lot of people from diverse backgrounds, a lot of people that have similar interests. And it's a really fun profession. So I would say, you know, go for it. Absolutely. We need more people in the profession for sure. And the more people that know about it, I think the better we get.
Advice for architects that are going to work with landscape architects. Do you have any messages for those folks?
Yeah. So it's pretty common, actually. I mean, when I was getting my graduate degree, I mean, we had, the program was small. There was probably 15 of us in our master's class, but honestly, like 5 of them, I think, were previous architects. Like it's a very common career path for people to go into architecture and then get introduced to landscape architecture by way of one of those projects like that we were talking about earlier. You know, you're subbing out to a landscape architect, or you're under a landscape architect, you know, but you're working alongside a landscape architect. You say, oh, this is pretty cool what they do. You know, like, wow. And you start to learn more about it, and you say, this might be a good fit for me. You know, so it's actually a pretty common career path to go from architecture to landscape architecture. And I think that I think that architects that become landscape architects are very skilled, because they have such a good basis in like the human proportion and the human scale. And so they just come into it with design, like check the box, like you got it. Like you got the design side. Like you have such a strong foundation in that, you know, and then you're just kind of building on that and learning, you know, all the other things that it takes to be a landscape architect. But I think it's a great career move. So if you are thinking about it, learn more about it, you know, I'm always available. If anybody wants to talk to me, please reach out. On the website, the Pass the LRE website, you know, you can go to the info at and it goes straight to me. Or just talk to any friends or colleagues that you might have that are in landscape architecture and see if you think it might be a good fit for you.
Mm-hmm. The final little bit of advice. Do you have any advice for owners or clients who are thinking about hiring a landscape architect or are looking at land or something that they have, and like, what should they consider?
Yeah. Well, a lot of times people will skip over it. A lot of times clients will say, or developers, you know, they don't understand the value in it, but it's the difference between a so-so site and an awesome space. You know, like it is how you can, it's placemaking, right? I mean, it's combining all these disciplines and it's making a place special where people remember it, where they want to come to it, where they, you know, they create memories, they create an experience versus just blah, there's your everyday, you know, site. And so yeah. I think it's very valued. And the next time you're in a public space, kind of look around and try to experience it. And that helps you understand the value of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think landscape architecture, it's not just we're planting plants. It's you're creating the texture of a site. You're making pathways and balancing shadow and light and shade. And it's, I mean, also in turn, we didn't really talk about it too much on this episode, but resiliency. How is the water being managed? What is the, you know, solid surface or permeable surface? And it's really impacting kind of how successful that site is, how often it floods, where water goes, where it runs off to, where is ponding and pooling, and how resilient is it in different, you know, all the crazy heat that we're getting and cold and ice and rain and all of that. So it's landscape architecture is essential to making sure that spaces are not only beautiful and functional, but successful in the long run.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, kind of what I touched on earlier, as far as like system design. You know, you have all these different systems that you're working with in landscape architecture, and that's stormwater, you know, that's climate change, that's it's wildfires in some areas, you know, in California, and then landslides and earthquakes, and, you know, and again, like wildlife migrations, and then you've got the, and that's just the ecological systems component, right? Then you've got the people systems component. You've got different mobility types. You've got bikers, skateboarders, walkers, you know, handicap accessibility. You've got all the, you know, children, elderly, you've got all these different people that you're also trying to design for. And then you have the functionality of the site. If it's an amphitheater, or, you know, the programmatic systems as well. So you're really wrapping your arms around the whole thing and trying to make it work together and create a beautiful space at the same time.
Well, thank you so much for everything that you have shared on this episode. I really appreciate you giving the summary of everything from what school do you need to go to? How do you get your license? What are the materials out there for testing, the testing process, studying process? And then also, what is the profession like? What do you work on? What are important things to consider and concern? So Claire, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Caitlin, thanks so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it. My pleasure.
Excellent. And I also should mention too, if people want to follow you or look up Pass the LARE, what are some resources that they can Google or Instagrams they can follow?
Yeah, absolutely. So Instagram is just Pass the LARE. So at Pass the LARE, we've got Facebook, Instagram, and then we've got the website, which the website is, you know, the main body. That's where all of our study resources are listed. And like I said, there's a contact us page on that. You can also reach out to us on social media through direct messaging and that sort of stuff as well. So please reach out again if you want to talk more about the licensure process or just landscape architecture in general. I am super available and would love to talk to anyone.
Excellent. I will put all of those in the show notes so people, if they didn't write that down or they're driving, maybe they can go back and click those links later. So thank you, Claire. I appreciate it.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Caitlin.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Architect Debt. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to share it with your network, leave us a 5-star rating and review, and follow us on social media. Reach out to the podcast directly at architectet.com. That's architect.com. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. See you then.